In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Yeah, it's time to talk movies on Pass the Popcorn as we welcome in Alan Adams of The Main Edge. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. Happy Monday to you.
And to you as well.
I know you you wrapped up your experience flying solo at Penobscot Theater. Always bittersweet to wrap up a show. You're glad to have some time back, but you miss the connection and the energy of it all. Is it different putting behind you a virtual show?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, you don't have the same sort of physical, connection because you're not in the same place. But at the same time, like, you know, before every show, before every performance, like, we're in a virtual dressing room of sorts. Like, we're all connected. Like, we can all see each other. We can all hear each other. And so it is, it's not quite the same as, you know, being backstage during a show. But, I mean, it's similar. And, as someone who's always sort of loved that part of it, maybe as much as any of it, it was nice to have something that was at least, a reasonable facsimile of the experience. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to say goodbye to those folks just because, you know, it's just a really talented group, really fun group. And, by all accounts, it has been extremely well received across the board, which is great, and I hope it encourages folks to try similar experiments going forward, because I think this one was pretty successful.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, it was great. I really enjoyed it, and yeah, hope others take some inspiration from that. All right, well, let's talk movies. How many did you see over the weekend?
Got a chance to see three.
Ooh.
We got a couple of narrative originals from the streaming services, and also have a documentary. So do you have any preferences as to what kind of movie you would like to talk about?
I will follow your lead, sir.
Well, fair enough. Let's start with, I saw a movie called Bliss. It's on Amazon Prime Video, and it's stars Owen Wilson and Salma Hayek. And it's a, now you guys have heard of simulation theory, right? The idea that we're all
yes,
we're all living inside a giant simulation.
Mm-hmm.
This movie basically is riffing on that idea. It's written and directed by this guy Mike Cahill, who's a pretty well known sort of indie auteur type. Does a lot of really interesting genre movies. He did Another Earth, a movie called I, Origins. This is the first time that he's really had like someone's opened up the checkbook for him. You're never sure how it's going to go with these indie folks when they finally get when someone finally backs up the truck. Sometimes, it elevates their work. And other times you can tell they kind of get bogged down by having resources. Like, I know it sounds counterintuitive, but when you're used to sort of operating by the seat of your pants to know that you can just, pay for whatever you want, I think that can undermine creativity in certain folks. And I think that's kind of what happened here. Because this guy has a history with doing a lot with a little. And it's familiar territory with regards to content. But he's got some great ideas, and the performances are pretty strong. But this one never really clicks, particularly when we get into the third act where everything sort of starts to crumble. The basic gist is this. You've got a guy named Greg Whittle, played by Owen Wilson, recent divorcee, struggling to maintain a relationship with his children, hates his job. He works as a mid-level executive type for some sort of vaguely defined technical support company. But he spends all his time sketching these images, like these vivid pictures of a place he's never been and people he's never met, these memories of things that he can't possibly remember. But one day it all crumbles. Like, he gets called to the carpet by his boss. He gets fired. An event that leads to a very tragic and frankly absurd sort of aftermath. He flees, winds up at a bar across the street, and he bumps into this stranger, a woman named Isabel, played by Salma Hayek. She's a wild-haired sort of weirdo who kind of captures his attention by telling him that he is quote-unquote real, unlike the vast majority of people around them. She has this, like, impossible knowledge about his situation, and she demonstrates an ability to manipulate the world around her, which is an ability that we quickly find that Greg apparently shares. The two of them kind of get swept up into Isabel's world. It involves, like, wandering through homeless encampments and lots of talk about what it's like in the real world, and involve, like ingesting odd crystals and things like that. Meanwhile, Greg's kids are trying to track him down, but he's he's out wandering around with this woman, Isabel. When Greg finally demands proof of these claims, that's when it gets weird, because it turns out she is telling the truth. The world in which they are living is a simulation. But when she helps him kind of find his way out, I'm not going to spoil it, but it's the usual dynamic when it comes to finding out you're living in a simulation is kind of subverted, kind of flipped on its head in a way that that I found very interesting. But unfortunately, it never quite comes to the fruition that you want it to. Like, look, this is an ambitious movie. But the realization of that ambition is kind of uneven. Like, we have some familiar ideas, world computer simulation, parallel existence, that sort of stuff. And he does address them, and Cahill does address them in a different manner. But the differences wind up feeling a little bit surface level. It's funny because, like, he goes to all the trouble of sort of deconstructing this idea and then basically just rebuilds it back to the way it was, which seems like an odd choice. And again, he's all about narrative ambiguity. Like, that's a central theme in the work that he does. And he's really delighting in the bifurcated nature of this particular story and leaves things open-ended to a degree that I think a lot of audiences are probably going to be turned off by. Like, I'm someone who, I like some ambiguity in my movies, particularly genre movies. But at a certain point, it's like, you gotta give us something. You don't have to give us the whole picture, but you have to at least give us pieces. Now, leaving that aside, the performances are really good. Like, Owen Wilson's really good here. He really just sort of phases, like, that sort of, aw, shucks, wow, amiability that he has. Like, that's gone. Like, it's just gone. Like, we don't see it. And I wouldn't have guessed he was able to do that. So that was really striking. He does this wonderful job of evoking that sort of quiet brokenness and general malaise. And then Hayek's going for it in a completely different way, like loud and brassy and rambling weirdness that kind of skates up to the edge of incoherence but never quite crosses over, which is great. Like, they're an odd pairing, but they really work. The supporting cast is really good as well. There's also, we even get a couple of scenes featuring Bill Nye, the Science Guy, of all people, turns up in this movie. Look, Mike Cahill's a legitimately talented filmmaker. Like, we could use more Mike Cahills in the world of genre filmmaking, particularly in studio filmmaking. But in this case, I think his eyes were maybe a little bigger than his stomach. Like, the work from Owen Wilson and Salma Hayek and the rest of the cast, like, helps even things out some, but it isn't quite enough. He's trying to show us the Matrix, but we don't really see it the way he obviously intends. Not a great movie, but an interesting effort. And if you're a fan of sci-fi, like, you'll probably find something to like here.
That's awesome. All right, that's a movie number one. What's up next?
I saw a movie called Malcolm and Marie. It's currently screaming, I believe, on Netflix. We've talked about this already. We talked about it a little bit with that Chiwetel Ejiofor and Anne Hathaway joint from a couple of weeks ago. But the pandemic movies are coming, and we're just shy of a year since everything shut down. and we're starting to see the early fruits of the sort of pivots that the pandemic has forced on filmmakers. And like it or not, like, these movies are going to be defined by the circumstances of their origins. Like, separating movies made during this time from this time is going to be impossible. And I'm not necessarily saying that these movies are about the pandemic or even like feature the pandemic, but they're shaped by the real life, real world circumstances in which they were made. And this one is a prime example. I feel like we're going to see a lot of projects that are like this one. It is a straight up two-hander. There are literally two people that we ever see on the screen in the entire movie. It's a legitimate single location shoot. Like, all of the action takes place in and around a single house. It's dialogue heavy. It's black and white. It's a relationship drama that features, you know, two actors that are on, that are sort of on the ascent to movie stardom. Like, I don't think they're there yet, but we've got Zendaya and John David Washington. And, you know, and all of this came together over the course of like a couple of weeks with a small crew, all in an effort to basically keep everybody working following the shutdown of Hollywood operations, because writer-director Sam Levinson is one of the guiding forces behind Euphoria, which is the HBO show on which Zendaya stars. Like, they shut down production on that. And this movie kind of came out of them wanting to make sure everybody kept getting paid. And so you have this dense, dialogue-driven movie, that's, how do I put this? It's inspired by something that actually happened to Levinson himself, but, you know, based on is probably a little bit strong. Very dialogue-dense, very back and forth and verbose, but ultimately it kind of rings a little bit false. Now, here's the deal. You have Malcolm, played by Washington, and Marie, played by Zendaya. They arrive home following the premiere of a new film by Malcolm. Like, it's a project that promises to be his breakout success. It's a drama about a young addict trying to get her life in order, and it looks like it's going to be what elevates Malcolm into that next tier of Hollywood players and giving him a chance to really grow his career. But as we quickly learn, there's a lot of tension in the room, and we learn why. In the course of giving his remarks when he was introducing the film, Malcolm thanked everyone involved in any way with this project except Marie. He forgot to thank Marie. And considering her feelings about the film, as well as her own potential contributions to it, as you might imagine, tempers are running high. And what we get after that is basically a long night of interpersonal drama, of like fights piled upon fights that spiral into something that's very dark, much deeper. Like, these are fights that challenge the fundamental underpinnings of their relationship. And then we reconcile, we reconnect physically and emotionally, and then more conflicts with, and both of them dredging up their best, worst feelings to attack the other, you know, just like sweet nothings to venom and then back, just and all of it very angry, or, you know, angry exchanges or extended diatribes, like incredibly long and wordy monologues, and some of these, they're taking shots at each other, but they're also taking some time to basically eviscerate the movie-making machine or film critics or what have you. And as the night progresses, the two of them are kind of forced to come to terms with not just the surface-level battle in which they're embroiled currently, but the underlying issues that are between them and whether their relationship can survive those resentments being brought into the light and whether they even want it to. Now, look, this movie very much wants to be viewed as important. Like, it's obvious from the first moment we see on screen. It's like, okay, this movie takes itself very seriously. Unfortunately, the energy that it brings doesn't quite measure up to those very obvious ambitions. And look, I recognize that there are many limitations that come with these circumstances. But I feel like even like within those narrowed parameters, like, the film falls a little bit short. And full disclosure, like, the blame for that rests squarely on Sam Levinson's shoulders. Like, it is, like, directorially, we get a lot of wide shots that are kind of devoid of any sort of dynamic vibe. It's all very static and very flat. Even when the camera's moving, it feels like it's standing still, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. and then you know, and it's like you've got the, you know, the choice to go black and white probably seemed like interesting and arty, particularly considering the many kind of racially charged aspects of this narrative. But instead, it just kind of feels lazy and a little on the nose. And then we come to the script, which is, like, again, long diatribes where the words are coming out of Malcolm, but it's clearly Levinson speaking. Whether we're talking about that sort of kernel of truth I was talking about that inspired the film, because this the forgetting to thank his Levinson forgot to thank his wife at a movie premiere a couple years ago, and then but then we move to the sort of there's this one long extended stretch which just openly scorns just the notion, the existence of film criticism. And it's like these monologues, they're clearly thinly veiled excuses for Levinson to sort of rail against the people that he feels have wronged him. And it's just, it's a lot. And look, Washington and Zendaya do their best with what they've got. And they are like, just, I mean, we're talking like buckets of charisma. Like these are legitimate, like capital M, capital S movie stars in the making, but they're not there yet. And when you're sort of saddled with a script that is not doing you any favors and you're sort of trapped, by the insular framework that comes with that sort of single location setting, like it's just, they can't do it. You know, it's like, you know, they're doing their best. Like he, you know, they're projecting that sort of presence, that makes them both so incredibly watchable. But, you know, they're still learning. They're still young, and they don't necessarily have the range necessary to fully elevate material like this, if anyone does. Like, that's the thing. I don't want to sound like I'm damning them with faint praise. It's not their fault. Like, they're doing their best, and I don't know, like, you get Denzel and Meryl Streep in there, and I don't know that they're saving the script. So, it's not their fault. And so we're just sort of left to watch them sort of stalk each other through this house, like some sort of weird emotional labyrinth. And you're not sure at any given moment which one's Theseus and which one's the Minotaur. So it's just like it's very difficult to sort of engage with on the emotional level that they clearly want you to. So, what this movie does is give you some great examples of how not to handle filming in a pandemic.
All right.
You know, pedestrian direction and a haughty score-settling script doesn't matter if you got two genuine talents in the center of the frame. So, yeah, kind of a swing and a miss with this one.
All right. And finally, the documentary.
So I watched it. It's an HBO doc. It's called Fake Famous. I don't know if you've heard about this movie.
I have not.
But. It's written and directed by journalist Nick Bilton. He's a tech journalist. It's his first movie, and it's basically I'll be the first to admit that I have a very tenuous grasp on the notion of what it means to be a quote unquote influencer. Like on social media and stuff, like you build a following and you use that following to promote your own personal brand and brands of companies that are willing to give you stuff, to promote their stuff. But I don't necessarily understand why, because fame used to be the byproduct of talent, whatever that talent was, if you were musician or an actor or an athlete or a politician or whatever, like you were famous because you did things, you did something. But now, like, especially in the last 10 years or so, like that formula's kind of been inverted.
Right.
Like, so you basically do the things because you're famous.
Famous for being famous, right?
Yeah. And that's what this documentary titled Fake Famous is kind of addressing. It sort of bills itself as a social experiment. It's an effort to sort of delve into what exactly it means to be an influencer, and digging into, you know, the notion of whether or not are influencers born or are they made. And it all boils down to numbers. Like, it's like, how many followers do you have on Instagram? How many of those followers actively engage with your account? Like, that's the currency that we're talking about here. And those numbers are the difference between a nice social media following and then the place where you get people send you gifts and all these things to try to cash in on your reach. Now, the experiment's very simple. Bilton, he puts out a casting call, a very straightforward request, basically being like, hey, do you want to be famous? And as you might imagine, in L.A., plenty of folks showed up. So it mostly models and actors, for obvious reasons, and they all turn out for their shot at fame. And ultimately, he picks three. There's an aspiring actress named Dominique, a real estate assistant named Wiley, and a songwriter slash fashion designer named Christopher. And from there, the plan's very simple. Turn these sort of unassuming people, you know, they have like, oh, their social media followings are in the 1,000 range, like right around there. And so the plan is we're going to turn these people into social media influencers, you know, building that small collection of followers into that sort of 6 or 7 digit cohort that gets you noticed. And there are a number of avenues through which this can be done, a lot of which are, let's say, ethically questionable. Bilton purchases followers for each account. There's unsavory websites out there that allow for you to bulk up the numbers by purchasing fake followers, bots, etc. You could also purchase a set number of likes and comments, you know, intended to sort of grow that illusion of engagement. Then they do some very sneaky photo shoots that are intended to continue sort of grow the building that facade of someone who's living a lifestyle far more lavish than what they do. It was actually really kind of cool to sort of get a look at some of the tricks that these people use to give the impression of leading a more glamorous life than they actually do. There's actually a really great one, and I'm not going to spoil it by telling you specifically, but there's a really great one that actually involves a toilet seat. Yes, yeah, seriously, they use a toilet seat well, it's not the way you usually use a toilet seat, I'll tell you that much.
Okay.
But as the experiment sort of goes on, like each of these people kind of winds up at their own personal crossroads. Because here's the thing, like there's a significant amount of work that goes into doing this, and a lot of stress as well. Like your goal is to appear footloose and fancy free, but it's very obvious early on that this is a path that is marked with a lot of obstacles. Like it's a hustle. It's just like anything else. Like you got to keep moving and you got to keep pushing, or you're going to fall by the wayside. Now, I won't specify the details, but the experiment plays out in very different ways for each of the three individuals. And none of it goes the way that the filmmaker anticipates from the beginnings right up through to the very end when the real life, again, when COVID-19 sort of forces its way into the proceedings. It's interesting. It's an interesting document. Like it's this really fascinating look at how our notions of fame and the benefits of fame have been sort of irrevocably altered by the explosion of social media. Like, look, we've always known that it's possible to buy your way to fame. Like, that's not a new idea, but it is one that has been just taken to a whole different level in recent years. And again, like most of what we see here is kind of surface level. But if you, like me, have relatively little knowledge of this sort of online world, it's a pretty solid primer. You know, peek behind the curtain, you know, and it's like, you know, for so many of these people, like there's no great and powerful odds. Like there's just people, there's just a person back there pulling levers, you know, presenting this image to the world that is, you know, illusory, all in pursuit of the sort of perceived power that comes with that fame. And, you know, and interspersed throughout all this, we get interviews with some talking heads, people who understand fame in different ways. You know, a couple academics, some social media mavens. Although the best interview, the one that I found most interesting, was he spoke with Justine Bateman, the actress.
Yeah.
You know, because you know she has her own very real experiences with fame, and she wrote a book about it. You know, so she's she's got that sort of dual perspective that I think is really interesting. You know, and then these interviews kind of provide a welcome context set against the sort of ongoing, you know, experiment that is central to the movie. Look, one could argue that this movie promotes these notions of fame as much as it disabuses people of them. But, you know, I mean, it's very cynical, but even then it can't help but make some of this stuff look pretty great. But again, speaking solely for myself, it's tough to watch this and think that being an influencer is like a good gig. But I say that, but there are thousands upon thousands of people out there, young people in particular, who genuinely believe that this life is the one they want and it's the one they're going to have. Like, and that's, which is crazy to me, but I get it. Like, it all looks very exciting and lucrative and rewarding when you see it on the screen, but, you know, and fame is part of the cultural fabric in a way that it just never was for previous generations. Like, it's not the byproduct of other accomplishment. It is the accomplishment. And so, as a social experiment, I would say this was probably a mixed bag, but as a documentary, I think it's successful. Like, if you're interested in this world and the way it works, like, there's plenty about this movie that will that you'll find engaging. You know, and hey, man, like, you just got to get out there and, you know, do it for the gram.
There you go. Alan Adams of The Main Edge talking movies with us on Downtown. Thank you, Al. Appreciate it, as always, and we'll catch up with you on Wednesday.
That sounds great.